Ah, Mayor Dinkins. As a special treat, your movie this week is a little bit of a change of pace. It's about a bunch of astronauts who go on a space mission back in the 50s. It's called 12 to the Moon.
Dun, 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 dun. I just thought we might want some dramatic music now. 12 to the Moon. Nothing.
I mean, maybe if it was 11 to the Moon, I would be excited.
Oh, 12 is too many?
Or 13 to the Moon, like sort of a Last Supper situation. You know, one of them will betray them.
One of them did betray them, though.
Yeah.
The French guy.
Of course, it's got to be the French guy.
Yeah, those terrible French.
So I think we can agree to two basic facts. One is this is still a very bad movie. Mm-hmm. And two is it's significantly better than some of the ones we've been watching recently.
Yep. Yeah, I can agree to both of those things.
Yeah. I actually had fun watching this one.
Yeah.
So that was a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah. It was a good episode of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. It's a bad movie, to be clear.
Yeah.
This is not a good movie.
No.
But it was bad in a more fun way.
Mm-hmm.
It actually was really quite interesting. Like just as a film buff, I found this movie fascinating because we had to look up when it was made. It turns out it was made in exactly 1960. And it kind of shows to me, like, it feels like I mentioned this while we were watching it, but it feels like a bridge between the 1950s era sci-fi and the 1960s era sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Because it started out, it almost felt like two movies to me. Well, actually, before I monologue, what did you think of it?
I think it was a really decent, low budget, you know, black and white science fiction movie that mainly is a 50s movie with like you said, just a little bit of 60s wackiness. I think the point you're about to make is that it gets more 60s as it goes along. Which made it better. The beginning of the movie is the most boring part. The riffing got better too as it went along. The second half of it, like if you were going to only watch some of certain Mystery Science Theater episodes, I would say, yeah, watch the second half of this one.
Yeah.
Because the movie gets wackier, which makes Mike and Trace and Kevin wackier. And there's just more material in the second half. The first half of the movie was like just one of those 50s padding things where they very slowly assemble one at a time and then very slowly leave for the moon.
Right.
And there's 12 of them. So they each get their stupid little, you know, moment in the sun.
Right.
And you have to wait patiently while you get through all that.
Do you remember when the frat boy American guy came and like literally posed and turned his chin sideways to the camera?
Yeah, it was awesome. I was like, oh, yeah, there's our American hero.
What was his name? It was like John Johnderson or something.
Yeah. Well, they started doing the space mutiny thing where the riffers just started giving him fun names. You know,
Captain Cliff Beefpile.
Yeah.
That's the one I remember.
Cliff Beefpile. That's great. Yeah, which is funny because I don't actually think he did that much. Did he save them at the end? Or
no,
was
in fact, he got kind of like despondent and dark near the end of it.
Yeah, he doesn't really do that much.
Which I definitely want to get into.
And it's funny because they introduced him and he immediately seemed like the hero. And then they introduced the German guy and he immediately seemed like the villain. And neither of them actually ended up playing those roles.
No.
They both got sort of sidelined while like most of the action, I would say the most important roles were the French guy because he betrays everybody.
Yeah.
And the Chinese woman who's like translating the aliens because the aliens speak almost Chinese for some reason, which they never explain.
No.
But it's like Chinese plus hieroglyphs for some reason.
But also it's telepathic, but yeah, also they have to write it down.
Yeah. And she can somehow read all that.
Yeah.
I guess because she's Chinese or right. Brilliant or something.
So I got to say, this episode fascinated me.
Yeah.
Are you ready for me to way overanalyze this.
Okay, yeah.
Are you
sure.
ready for Adam reads way too much into a super generic 1960s era sci-fi movie?
Go for it.
I would, like, if I was still a film student back in school, I would totally write a freaking paper about this movie because I'd like, the more I thought about it, especially once it was over, it feels like the first half of the movie, like the first 40 minutes, were like the director's way of hiding their real intentions. It almost kind of felt like at some point they were like, okay, are they gone? Are all the normal people gone?
Yeah.
Now I can make the movie I want to make. Like, like one of those things where you have to do it for the censors. Like, you know, like,
I see.
A kind of a Reefer Madness-y sort of jam.
You mean he was like hoping people wouldn't watch the second half of it?
Maybe, right?
You know, I was just watching, if I can divert for a moment, I was watching a documentary on the original Evil Dead by Sam Raimi.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of did the same thing. They had two movies. They had the movie where they were killing off the teenagers one at a time in the cabin. And that was like the movie that Sam and Bruce Campbell were kind of less interested in.
Right.
And then basically they just like Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell stayed behind on location and filmed the second half, which is mostly Bruce Campbell. And that's like most people's favorite part of the movie is like when all the other teenagers are dead, but they're like, he's still being haunted by the cabin itself and he's running around and he's got a chainsaw. And, and that was like the movie they wanted to make. But they needed to have like the sexy teenagers and the sort of like the story, to make just like casual viewers of horror satisfied.
Yeah.
So, when you watch it, you can see like after the last teenager dies, there's this tonal shift, which I think happened in 12 to the Moon.
Yeah.
There was a point in 12 to the Moon where the whole thing shifted from schlocky vanilla 50s to sort of a spicier.
I think it was right about when they started walking through the caves and then those two people got trapped in the quicksand and one of them actually died.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second, this is a movie where people die?
Yeah.
Like, that's not very 1950s of you. And
I think only seven of them made it back.
Yeah.
Right?
And then from that moment on, it was almost like a different movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm undoubtedly like reading way too much into this, but it felt like the crew was a bunch of people that had had to make several of these 1950s generic sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
And they were just like tired of it.
Yeah.
And they got about halfway done with the movie and they were like, I'm so sick of the good guys winning.
Yeah.
And the Americans being the heroes.
Right.
We're just gonna, man, we're gonna turn this whole situation
and there was
on
like,
its head.
There was a very classic 50s love interest going on with two of the crew members.
Right.
Which just turns into them wandering away and I think getting killed.
Well, they get kidnapped by the aliens and we never see them again.
Yeah. So it's like they just kind of let, they like put that in there.
Yeah.
And then just let it go.
Yeah. But more, I mean, so there's lots of details. Like you pointed out the fact that the American turns out to be kind of a schlock and the German's the good guy.
Yeah.
But on a deeper level, the real thing is the fundamental message of the first half of the movie is the future is great and aliens are going to be friendly. And then the last half of the movie is very more like 70s, where it's like, ooh, the future's scary and weird crap might happen. And I don't know about this whole science thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a complete tonal shift.
Yeah, you're
right. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, they do. It does have, it's not so bold to have a bad ending. It does fundamentally end with, I think, barely the majority of them making it back. The aliens are not going to bother. There's a part where it seems like they're going to take Earth.
Right.
And then they kind of just don't.
Right.
So it didn't go too far.
Right.
It wasn't so bold as to say, like, we're going to throw every science fiction convention out the window.
But even when they quote-unquote win or have a good ending, it's not because the human protagonists save the day. The aliens just basically decide, like,
yeah,
I guess you're cool.
Yeah.
We won't blow up Earth.
Well, they've
now
been observing humans and they have just enough good things to say about them to let them live.
Right.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot to process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just find that whole thing, and of course that makes it a way more interesting episode to watch and it makes the jokes way better, you know, because there's just something to like to grasp onto.
Yeah.
But it's not mean-spirited like Hellcats. It's still
God, no,
like
no.
upbeat-ish. It's just very odd. It's a very odd movie, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's not at all boring and bland. I mean, the first half is. The first half is agonizingly dull.
Yeah.
And I was worried we were in for a pretty basic experience, especially once they started with that god-awful General Motors design commercial.
Oh, right. There was
I
a
bet
short...
you already forgot about that.
Yeah, but I loved it, though. You didn't like that?
No. I did like it. Yeah. I mean, that's your classic Mystery Science Theater schlock.
How could I have forgotten? Because that's what they decided to latch onto for all their skits.
Yeah, the Nuvina thing.
They just kept going with it.
I didn't really like the Nuvina skits. I know you didn't? You kind of liked them.
Oh, man.
But yeah. I thought it just went on way too long. It was like a one-note joke, and then they just kept going.
Yeah.
But I did like the General Motors design thing because it was so blatant and just over the top, but the production value was insane. The rotating cars and the hot men with masks on and
lots of extras. There were just like hundreds of people
and all the wire work, you know, with her like floating around and all that.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. They legitimately wrote music.
Yeah.
I mean, like a soundtrack.
Yeah.
With like multiple lyrical songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's all in the space of how much was that, like 15 or 20 minutes?
I wouldn't even say that long.
Yeah.
Maybe so, more like 10.
I mean, somebody put a lot of effort into that. I mean, General Motors, I guess, put a lot of effort into that thing.
Yeah, and it's not even, it's back in that era when like companies would have ads for themselves, ?
Yeah, where would you have watched that whole thing?
I think before that movie, like in a theater.
It just would have played automatically.
I think so.
Fascinating.
Or maybe they showed it in like weird hours of the day on TV. But you'll notice it was an ad just for like the concept of General Motors. Like they weren't trying to get you to buy a specific product.
No, it was the brand.
It's not even clear what
And it was the idea of the brand, like GM, having a vision of the future.
Right.
You were supposed to be so compelled by their notion of tomorrow.
Right.
Which I, you know, I'm not so vain to believe that this, obviously you watch it in 2026 and you're like, oh my God, the cheese and schlock of it.
Yeah.
But I get it. I think in 1960, that shit worked really well.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I probably would have fallen for it too. I probably would have walked away going like, oh man, GM's vision of the future.
Yeah.
I almost kind of wish I was that like, I was that naive and optimistic, you know, that I could watch a thing like that.
Hey, I mean, I'll tell you, in 2026, I feel like we've overcorrected and the cynicism dial is at maximum. I'm down for a brand just being like, hey, we're cool and we think about the future.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like...
Well, the problem is all the brands that do that are making evil things.
Yeah,
You know, like artificial intelligence.
Right. I mean, the thing is you have to back it up with actions. And
this was a time when we didn't even really know that cars were really bad for the environment much yet.
No. And we still thought that like microwave food was healthy.
Totally.
It was a really good idea.
God, it would be great to live in that era. The simplicity of it, you know, the innocence. There's innocence hugely on display, even in the movie, I would say, especially again, that first boring half. Just the idea that 12 people came together from 12 countries and they were 12 clearly disputable, like countries that in 1960 were not allies, you know?
Right.
And so it was this utopian kind of like, look, the whole world came together to go to the moon and we're all doing it as a unified globe.
Yeah.
They just don't make movies like that anymore.
By the second half... And honestly, even parts of the first half, it really, really started to give me like precursor to Star Trek, the original series vibes.
Totally.
It felt like an episode.
It crawled so Star Trek could run.
It just felt like an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the inscrutable aliens and the puzzle to solve and different people with different philosophies on how to get there. And one guy goes a little nuts and then somebody dies in the quicksand.
Yeah.
I mean, it just had that very original series vibe.
And they took a lot of time in the beginning of the film and then they reinforced it a lot in dialogue, but you didn't get much actual action to this point. But everyone on the ship, just like Star Trek, had a very specific function.
Right.
Like it was like one of these guys is the navigator. One of them's like the science officer. Right. And they were really, really specific about that.
Yeah.
Which kept make me keep thinking that that was going to pay off on some plot level. But then all they would ever do is they'd hang out in that one room with the little pole and stare at computer screens as a dozen, like all together. They'd all just like hunch over the same computer.
Yeah.
I was like, shouldn't they each have like their own, I don't know, like stations and shit to do? And
well, in the interior of the spaceship was hilarious because even in Star Trek, they put some energy into the thought of it being like a bridge of a ship.
Yeah.
But this just felt like a room.
It was a round room.
Like a big room.
With a fire pole going down to a lower room.
Like there was no directionality to it.
No.
Like which way is forward?
No.
Which way is the ship going?
At one point they randomly added that just like there was that one scene where they shunted all the, I can't remember what they were like putting, but they like put all this stuff into like a garbage disposal. So there was a little door that opened in the back.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the Death Fire Space Rock.
That's what it was. Yeah. And it was like, oh, there's like a little garbage disposal back there. Like
they... Well, my favorite part was in one of the shots, and one of the guys even says something about it, but I just turned to you and I was like, good thing they have a couch in the back. Right. Yeah. There's like no understanding of what it means to go to space.
No.
I read one time that every pound of stuff they would send to the moon cost an extra like $3 million. So like you don't put a couch in a spaceship.
No, you don't put a couch in a spaceship. Do you think that's more the lack of budget or that nobody bothered to sort of look up how to design a bridge or like a space shuttle?
I really don't know. This is one of those movies where I'd really like to look up what the production was because it was an odd mix of really professional work and obvious high budgets for things like the sound design.
Yeah.
And then, some really weird stylistic choices that make you wonder if they knew anything about anything.
Right.
It was an odd mix, which again, kind of lines up with Star Trek, the original series in some ways.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Like really good at some stuff. And then like my favorite, I think when I knew it really was where I was basically watching Star Trek, was the line, we both laughed so hard. I remember you actually like had to go into a different room.
Mm-hmm.
You were laughing so hard, but it was when they turned on their invisible magnetic helmet screens.
Yeah. Yeah, so good. So good. Was there even a noise or anything?
No, nothing.
They just said it.
Yeah.
They said, well, I've turned on my screens and now I can go to the moon.
So this movie had still that 1950s era thing, which, I mean, you still saw in Star Trek, but they seemed to realize how silly it was, where it was like you would just point your face at the camera and deliver exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am about to record the log of today's activities on the spaceship.
Yeah.
I am recording that log.
Yeah.
I am now done recording that log.
Right.
And so that was one of those moments where they just looked at the camera and they were like, I am now turning on my invisible magnetic helmet screen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they literally said those words
unironically
out loud. And then, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
No, nothing happened.
No. Yeah.
They really didn't funny. They didn't even do a post, like a sound effect in post.
No.
No.
They just went down to the moon.
It really did feel like people that had made a bunch of these 1950s sci-fi films and were just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to come out of retirement to make one last one for the money, but I'm just...
Yeah.
I don't even want
to... I don't care anymore.
I do not care.
Yeah. Because I think it was actually the moon itself more than the whatever spaceship they're on, right? That made me think... These production people don't care.
No.
Because the moon had all these gas things that they kept making fun of, the riffers, you know, kind of like little explosions of puffs of stuff would come out of, like steam would come out of the ground.
Yeah, Kevin kept saying, there's no steam in space.
And then there's quicksand. Why is there quicksand on the moon? And there's a lot of sand in general, but it's like beach sand. It's clearly like they just... Yeah. Through some like ocean sand
on
the ground.
Right.
And there's a cave that they all visit at some point where there's just air.
Yeah.
Why?
Right.
I don't know.
But there's not air in a different part of the moon.
No, just the one cave.
Yeah, just that one part.
Yep. They just take their helmets, their what did you call them?
No, electromagnetic screens. They're wearing helmets.
They just take those off.
It's just the helmets don't have a face.
Right.
Because
of the invisible screens.
Magnetic helmet screens.
Right.
They literally say the words. I mean, to the folks at home that haven't seen this movie, I'm not exaggerating. I actually wrote it down word for word. The guy says, now I'm turning on my invisible magnetic helmet screen.
Yeah.
Unironically.
Yeah. Why did they even bother at that point? I don't know. Why don't they just let him walk around without helmets?
It feels to me like people that know based on other movies they've made that this is the thing they're supposed to do, but they just can't bring themselves to care anymore. Mm-hmm. Like the final performance of Elvis Presley style, you know, where he's just like, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I can't bring myself. I just don't care anymore. You know, there was also this energy, this weird energy of like community theater overacting sometimes. Like I remember the meteor shower, which was really important to the movie for exactly 90 seconds and then promptly totally went away.
Yeah.
It was, I wrote down the line when they were in the film, they said something about being constantly bombarded by meteors. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Trace said, we're being constantly bombarded by useless dialogue. But it was like 90 seconds of urgency about the meteors.
Yeah.
And then they were gone.
Yeah.
Do you remember the guy that he was, I think he was supposed to be from Nigeria, but he was the one that would just like stare at things and way over emote.
Yes. He was very serious. He was like a little religious. I think that was like, he kept praying to Jesus.
Yeah. Right.
And he very grave and just, he was dripping in gravitas.
Whoever the hell that was. But he would be super intense for like 3 seconds and then just shut it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilariously.
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of that scene in Space Mutiny where the guy's like, ah.
Yeah. And right. And then he's done. Yeah. I have to say, I was sure he was going to be one of the ones to bite it too, but he makes it to the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're going to kill the Nigerian guy for sure.
Right.
He's way too serious.
Right.
And he's black and it's 1960. But no, he made it. All my preconceptions about what was going to happen were kind of shattered a little bit, except for the fact that they basically made it back alive and that Earth was saved. There wasn't really a lot of this that was actually all that predictable.
No.
Like, how would I ever have guessed that one of the 12 actually dies in a quicksand pit on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, not predictable. Say what you want about, you know, accuracy, but definitely not what I expected.
Yeah, and there was that whole actually really well-acted scene of the two of them going to their deaths in the little spaceship thing to try to nuke the cold freeze.
Yeah. And which is then offset immediately by they did one of these things where when they're actually on the other ship, they didn't have another set. So there's just black behind them.
Yeah, right.
It was the same as, it reminded me of Horrors of Spider Island when the plane's going down and they're just screaming in a void.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they just don't have a set.
But putting that aside, I mean, there are so many easy ways out of that scene. And they didn't take any of them.
No.
They were just like, well, man, I love you. I guess this is it. And then they blew up.
No, yeah. It was really sad.
Yeah.
I was very serious.
And you're like, wow, man.
Yeah.
This movie's fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, which, again, to be clear, it's not a good movie. It's a bad movie. No. But it was interesting, at least.
Yeah.
There was something going on.
Yeah.
It wasn't mean-spirited. It wasn't dull.
No.
I mean, the first half was kind of dull. But the second half wasn't. And even the first half was dull, but at least dull in just your basic 1950s way. It wasn't like Red Zone Cuba levels of dull.
Oh, God, no.
It was just your basic dullness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And very, very stereotypical.
Yeah.
Which is what makes the second half so much more interesting, because they played directly into stereotypes in the first half.
Right.
I mean, as hard as you could,
right?
The German guy was like direct and straightforward, and the American guy was in charge. And
it's just like two movies. It was like Evil Dead.
It's very strange.
It was like that. It was like that Quentin Tarantino movie. That's like a Quentin Tarantino movie. And then it's a vampire movie.
I hate that movie.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
It's like, and you don't see it coming at all.
Yeah. From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like one of my least favorite movies.
It had that vibe of like, oh, this is just a different film now. Like, some people left, some production and direction people left.
Yeah.
Others came in to finish it, and this is what we get.
I don't know, man. Maybe that happened.
Could be.
I'll have to go read the production notes.
Maybe there was an original ending, and they actually tested it or something, and everybody was like, it's boring, change it.
And at least the film quality was good, like the physical quality of the print, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know? No, it was pretty well intact. It was preserved well.
Yeah.
For a nonsense movie from 1960 that, again, I can't emphasize enough that at least 3/4 of the films that Mystery Science Theater has watched over the years, from the very beginning of the show till the present day, have been movies that no one would ever remember.
Right.
Without Mystery Science Theater, you just wouldn't know. Like, who knows about 12 to the Moon, except for maybe like those kind of Quentin Tarantino-esque, like super hardcore 50s schlock film buffs.
Yeah.
Which there really aren't that many people like that on the earth.
Did you read, by the way, this is nothing to do with 12 to the Moon, but Quentin Tarantino a while back bought this old classic like porn movie theater.
Oh, did he?
And he turned it into kind of like an Alamo Draft House, and they've been running it that way for like 10 years.
Nice.
But it's apparently like the 25th anniversary of the opening of this place. And so for a week, they're just going to go back to showing hardcore porn.
Where is this? Is this
I don't know.
Oh, that's awesome.
I can't
awesome.
Remember, but that's Quentin Tarantino for you right
there. Yeah, well, you need people like him.
Yeah.
Without people like him, movies like 12 to the Moon, and without Mystery Science Theater, they just literally wouldn't survive. And I know for a fact that there's a bunch of other movies that just haven't been as, I guess you could say, lucky as 12 to the Moon.
Yeah.
Because they just didn't get picked.
Yeah.
And I know there were movies that the Mystery Science Theater cast watched or started to watch and were just like, not this one. Let's not riff on this one.
Yeah. And this movie, probably everybody's dead, but I do know they've watched things from like the 80s where some of the folks are still alive. And they're like, oh, I'm so glad
they found the whole, like they found half the cast of Time Chasers.
Yeah. And Laser Blast too, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, so I guess now comes the part where we should probably give it a rating. Yeah. I have rated myself into a corner, as you have pointed out. I don't know what to give this exactly. My intention is to give it a middle of the road score.
Okay.
Reflecting its superiority to some of the garbage we've been watching recently, but also realistically, like,
yeah,
this is not a top 25 episode for me.
No, so
I would say something on the order of 6 feels appropriate.
Okay.
I could probably get talked into a 7.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to go with 6.
Yeah.
What do you got?
I go higher. I think it's not a 9 or a 10 for me because that's like the top 50, but I think it's an 8.
Okay.
I think that riffing is nearly a 10. Again, I skew it high because I love Mike and I do really love this awkward period between Joel and when like Bill Corbett came on the cast, like Trace is still in there and he's proving that he can be very versatile with different cast members. Cause he works really well with Mike.
Yeah.
And they didn't work together very long. Like I think it was only like a season and a half or something, but they're great. You know, like it's just as great as Joel and Trace.
Yeah.
If not better. And, you know, early Mike immediately proves that like Mike was a really good decision for casting. So you're just seeing that you're seeing the flourishing of Mystery Science Theater in an era that must have been very tense for fans.
Right.
Wondering if it would survive a host change.
Right.
For the first time. Now, when Mystery Science Theater decides it's going to bring back Joel or bring back Mike or add Jonah or add Emily, like, we don't really worry about it anymore, right? I think his fans were like, this is probably just going to go on forever. Like, they're just going to keep making Mystery Science Theater. And it's all going to be pretty good. I don't have any anxiety about it, you know? But I think back then, fans, you know, in whatever this would have been in the 90s, I guess, probably did have a lot of agita because you replaced Joel in the middle of season 5. And this is the end of season 5. So you're still in that era where you're like, are they even going to make it to season 6?
Yeah.
So I give it a really high score. I think it's a seminal. I think it's an important episode. I would definitely watch it again.
Yeah.
Very rewatchable.
Yeah. I tend to look at the episodes as isolated. I guess I'm not thinking about it in the overall like flow of the show. I'm just thinking like, how much did I enjoy this specific episode?
Sure, that's fair.
And I could probably go as high as 7, but I think to get past 7, what I would want is better skits, because I really just didn't enjoy the skits.
You didn't like Nuvina.
Yeah. I mean, it was all right. It was funny. I got the joke, and then I was like, okay, well, let's move on. And then they didn't. They came back to it like 3 times.
Yep.
And then also the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
It's just not that great.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets really better.
That's fair.
But like, if I watched it again, I'd probably skip the first half an hour. I'd watch the intro skit. Also, the other thing I want, and you said this too, is I want more TV's Frank.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, well, it's always the tragedy that a lot of times, not always, but much of the time, the Mads are only in the very beginning and the very end.
What was the one we watched where they were doing the whole domestic scene?
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Well, it was another early Mike one, and the joke was Mike doesn't really understand how things work yet, so he decides he's just going to check in.
Yeah, he's going
in the
call
middle
them.
Of the episode.
Right, he's going to call.
They don't even realize that he's on the phone yet. Like, yeah. They don't see the screen right away. Right. So they're doing like calisthenics and talking about TV shows they're going to watch. And they're like an old married couple.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. It's such a great way. That's the thing I really like about these early mics is they were just really good at finding a way to make it work. Whatever was changing about Mystery Science Theater, they're like, man, we're going to make it work.
Well, I'm sure it helps that Mike was the lead writer before he was actually on camera.
He was there almost the whole time.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't.
And he had been on camera in cameos. Like he had already done his, Manos guy, Torgo. I think he'd done Torgo a couple times.
Yeah.
Mike is the guy that would, if they needed a Torgo.
Yeah.
You know, like Torgo's Pizza.
Yeah.
That's Mike. Yeah. I'd just get your crazy bread. No. I mean, that was all Mike, right? So he was there and he was on camera. He was already a proven entity in a lot of ways.
Right. Okay, well, what else can we say about 12 to the Moon? What else is worth commenting on? It's a good episode.
Yeah, it's just such a 5 movie in a very high 8 or 9 episode of Mystery Science Theater is what it is. It's such a forgettable film that they rescued from the grave and they made it funny and interesting, like they do at their best.
I wrote down 2 more other riffs that I like. One was during the, I think it was during the General Motors skit. When when they were on the Highway of Tomorrow, and I think Trace was like, "We're about to take off on the Highway of Tomorrow." Uh-huh. Do you remember the Highway of Tomorrow?
Yeah,
and it just looked
just
like
off ramps
highway.
Yeah, it was super boring. Yeah,
and then the other one was when they got back from the very serious scene on the moon, and I think it was Kevin was like, "Thanks for ruining the spacewalk." Chuckles.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was great. That was really great.
Oh, man. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Dark Midwestern sense of humor
there. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Okay, well, 12 to the Moon. Things are looking up for our little experiment here. Mm-hmm. I feel like we were on a downward slide, and now I have hope for the future.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry we were so depressing.
Hey, no,
Hellcats.
It's fine.
Hellcats was bad.
I mean, hopefully now we'll actually get some episode that cracks the 7 for me.
I still keep wondering after Hellcats, what is actually going to be the worst episode of Mystery Science Theater? It's this existential question.
I think it probably varies a lot based on what you mean by worst, but there is some metric along which I could convincingly say Hellcats is the worst episode I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Like if you were to define quality in terms of like how much joy I got out of watching it, then Hellcats has got to be.
It was non-joy, yeah.
It's got to be way down there.
It'll be interesting to see if anything is more joyless than that.
I can certainly think of ones that are worse movies and ones that have worse riffs and worse skits.
Yeah.
But in terms of the overall mood of the total package being so dark and cynical and depressing, it's the man, Hellcats.
Hellcats was bad.
Boy,
don't watch it.
No,
just skip it.
Yeah, just watch 12 to the Moon.
Skip, you know, there's 200 million jillion episodes. There's only like 20
probably that are they're really skippable, and that's the first one we watched.
Yeah.
There's probably 10 or 15 more
right
out there.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. Less than 10%.
Just don't watch them. Just don't even bother.
Yeah, now there's going to be even more episodes. So
I can't wait, man. I'm so excited. I love it. Bring it on. Endless Mystery Science Theater. I'm so excited.
Okay. Well, until next time, 12 to the moon.
Ah, forget it. It's